Welcome to the Hard Water Fishing Show. Jeff and Jason talk tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends.
We are alive at the Hard Water Fishing Show, Season 4, Episode 4. It is the third week of November 2020, and the temperatures are dropping, and I'm starting to see pictures of ice and people fishing on said sketchy ice.
We got our first picture of somebody fishing on ice. I believe they're in Canada, though.
Yeah. I saw one up by Ely. I think, put a picture up today I saw purporting to be on Mille Lacs somewhere.
But I don't really know.
I have some authenticity questions on that particular picture. The way the picture's taken, you cannot tell how far out they would have been. They probably could have been like 3 feet offshore.
I'd be surprised if you get that far offshore, but I haven't been up to Mille Lacs in a couple weeks, so.
Yeah.
Wow. So, Jay, what are we talking about tonight?
Well, our tonight's topic is going to be ice fishing knots. We're going to talk about how to keep the lure on the line and hence the fish on the line on the lure because of the correct knot.
We had to call in a reliever on this one, right, Jay?
Yes.
We decided we just weren't the experts in this area.
No, I have one knot that I tie without consulting like a Google.
Yeah, we tied that one knot when we went fishing on Lake Superior, but I think it was once when I had the phone in front
of me.
And it's
been over a year now, and I probably can't retie that particular knot without consulting the Google.
No.
But I've used the Trilene knot for like ever. That's the knot.
That's the one I use too. I use it for everything.
But there's more knots than that in the world. So we have a guy, Ole, who will be giving us that, also known as Sean, but we interchangeably use Sean and Ole, and he's going to help us out. So stay tuned for that. You're going to learn a lot about knots. This guy can talk about knots for hours, but we're going to edit so you don't have to listen to it for hours. He's awesome.
Is it like in Forrest Gump where he goes on about how many ways you can cook shrimp?
It's exactly like that. Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Jay, what kind of beverage do you have tonight?
I'm going to mispronounce this, but I'm going to try.
It's not a Deschutes.
It is not. Lagunitas IPA, an India Pale Ale. And it says doggone good on it. Have you ever had this stuff?
I haven't. I've had it, but not in a while. And gosh, now I can't remember how to say it either. I don't think you said it right, but now I don't remember either.
Lagunitas.
That's not it.
Anyway, it's an IPA, India Pale Ale. It says, thank you for choosing to spend the next few minutes with it. They're aggressive on their drinking. Thank you for choosing to spend the next few minutes with this fine ale. Savor the moment as the expansive hop character engages the imperial qualities in the malt foundation and combat on the battlefield of your palate. Life is uncertain. Don't sip. And then they want us to give them a call. We should call
a battlefield of your palate. Oh, wow.
We should call them. They have a number.
I think we should call them.
Do we have the ability to do that? Like we can call people like a radio show. If it can work out, I'd meet you there. I don't know. I'm just reading this can. It's kind of weird.
It's like a novel on this can.
If it can work out, I'd meet there. I don't know the set time and such yet. But there will be a round with your name on it. That's what it says.
So they've saved a round for you already.
Yeah,
cool.
Brewed in Palmetto, California, and Chicago, Illinois. Ooh, Chicago. I mean, maybe. All right, here we go. I'm nervous. I've come to the conclusion that if it says hoppy, it's not my thing.
You are not an IPA guy, is what you're saying.
No.
I'm jealous. I want to try it, but, you know, you're a state away
the
from
me. The
battle
is nuclear. My palate is...
The battle on your palate?
My palate is losing.
How big is that beer? Is that like a...
It's substantial.
You're going to have to take a picture of the can and put it
out
there.
I don't even know. It doesn't even tell you how big it is.
Oh, my gosh.
It's written in small. All right. It must be aimed at 20-year-olds because... That category, because the words are too small in the damn can.
The can is big and the words are small.
I can't read them. It's not written for middle-aged gentlemen, I can tell you that.
There you go, middle-aged gentlemen, yeah.
What are you drinking?
Are you either one of those things?
No. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking a George Hunter Stout, which I had before. It's from Castle Danger. It's like a cream ale. Sure. It is... Just a really good winter. I mean, it feels like ice fishing when you drink this. I can imagine myself sitting on the ice, drinking this, catching a big walleye.
Boy, you're dreaming now.
Sounds awesome. I am dreaming. All right, here we go. You just can't go wrong. I think you'd enjoy this, Jason.
Well, it can't be. I'm gonna have to stay away from these India pale ale deals.
Yeah. And they're the rage, right? I mean, if you know, IPAs and double IPAs and hazy IPAs, and there's all kinds of IPAs out there. And if you like them, you like them. If you don't, drink something else because you won't like them.
I will tell you that this on the third or fourth sip is not offensive. Oh. It's less of that carpet taste than the last one I drank. Not the one before, the very first one, that dogfish head ale stuff.
Yeah.
This is less carpety.
So you're going to call their line and say, hi, I just opened your beer and drank some. It tastes less like carpet the third
yes,
sip.
Yes, maybe we'll do that. We'll see what they say. I doubt they'll send me a coupon.
They will not probably send you a coupon. They will probably thank you for your patronage. But please don't mention our beer.
I know. But we'll add that to another place that's not going to call us regarding a commercial.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to enjoy my George Hunter Stout Cream Ale. It is super awesome. I must admit, though, we had this discussion. It was better at the brewery in Two Harbors than it is in the can. But it's still
sometimes it's just the surroundings of where you're at. Like, I mean, I've cooked spam like in the B-Dub in the Boundary Waters, you know, and I love it. It's not doesn't quite have the same flair at home on a Sunday.
Yeah, there's nothing like spam and eggs. It's pretty good. All right, well, we better move on to show business now that we've moved on from beer to meals. Patron, not patron. Great way to support the show. We had a couple new supporters last week, so thank you to Leo and Tyler again. We didn't get any new ones this week, but feel free to donate to the show and help offset some of our production costs. Just wanted to note, I did update the shop a little bit, the merch shop. You can check that out. It's on the Hardwater Show page. They have socks. You can get Hardwater socks now, Jason.
Great stocking stuffers for Christmas.
And they had a deal yesterday or something, like 20% off if you bought three pairs. So
can we get a Hardwater Show mask?
You can. It is on there, and I added it to the store.
There you go.
So you have them.
That's lovely.
Yep. Backpacks. You can get a flag.
Okay.
All kinds of stuff out there. All right. You can find us primarily on Facebook and Instagram. That's a good place to interact with with us for the show. And we also have our website, hardwatershow.com, which has all of our episodes and a link to the merch and to the Patreon page. We also have YouTube, Jason.
Never been there.
Yep. And we're getting some views on there. So basically how YouTube works is our shows get converted into video so you can listen to them on YouTube if that's how you consume things. Yeah, you can really get the show in many amazing ways. I mean, on your Alexa... And any kind of platform that has podcasts, so it's all over the place. And you can email us at hardwatershow@gmail.com. That's a great way to send us an email. Remember, we do read everything, and usually we get back to everybody as soon as we can, but you know, sometimes it takes some time.
Yeah, I would say during the winter, you know, now that we're in season, so to speak, we keep up with it pretty well. If you send me an email in July, it might be a bit dicey. Well, it'll get read, but maybe not till October.
Well, and I would say this time of year is when we most read, because there's not enough ice out there to really be out fishing. So we are right on top of that. We have a few reader kind of news and current events stuff going on. So we did get an email from Thomas, and he had a really good question. He was asking about the regional use of the term hard water fishing. And, you know, growing up in Minnesota, which, you know, guilty, he said he usually called it ice fishing. And I think that's what I usually called it when I was younger, or I wouldn't say younger in age thing, back in that time. I think the hard water fishing has just kind of gotten more popular in the last, well, we've been doing the hard water invitational for 20 years, and we've been calling it that for 20 years, so it at least goes back that far.
Yeah, we have been. I was thinking it's more of a recent term, but we have been calling it that for 20 years.
I mean, that's not recent, I guess, if it's 20 years.
Yeah, wow.
We probably have listeners where that's their whole lifetime, so.
Yeah. Okay, yep. It's been around a little while. But definitely, I would say on social media and such and marketing has really pushed that term forward.
Right, and we don't really call it soft water fishing. Like, it's open water or hard water, right? Like, it's not, I don't know. And I suppose if you break down the term, really ice fishing doesn't make a lot of sense either, because you're not fishing for ice, you're fishing for fish.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
So, but I'm not also fishing for hard water.
Well, I'm searching for hard water right now.
I am searching for it, but yeah, so... I don't know. It's certainly not a term I came up with. It's not original to our show. It was around before then. I think it was just a different way to call ice fishing. So I think both work. I don't think there's anything wrong with hard water. Certainly nothing wrong with ice fishing. I usually try to include both words when we post things, and so it's easily findable. I'm sure there's some other words for it. You know, I think back to when we had talked about bob houses.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's lots of different terms for the same thing, which kind of brings me to the next thing, because this hard water versus open water or ice fishing question. So this kind of leads me into how we use terms and words matter, right? Is there was an article in Outdoor News, and I love Outdoor News. We get it every week. It's a great way to keep up to date on fishing and hunting and just tactics and what's going on. Author was saying that he once called the shelter that we fish out of, and back in that time, I bet you it was a hard-sided shelter, that he called a fish house and was told that you actually are supposed to call them ice houses.
I think you got it backwards again. He called it an ice house and you're supposed to call it a fish house?
No, I think it's the way I said it. I don't know.
Why would he get in
either
trouble?
Way? Well, because it's not a nice house. I don't know.
But he called it a fish house.
Right, but it wasn't a fish house. It was an ice house.
But an ice house is where you store ice. Can you get your facts straight and come back to us with an update?
Yeah, I don't know. I might have to go reread the article again to find out. But either way, they're really the same thing, right? So ice fishing, hard water fishing, ice house, fish house, bob house, whatever you call it, they're the same thing. So I don't know how these words come up. I sometimes think people just like to give new adjectives and ways to describe things.
Well, and I think I almost wonder, in this digital age, is, you know, when you're trying to market something, you got to come up with a different name so it's not trademarked or websites already taken or whatever, you know. Right. And so you end up kind of doing a one-off name a little bit, and it gains traction.
Well, and I remember, you know, 4 years ago now, when we were talking about starting this podcast, which actually would have been more than 4 years ago now, I remember driving home in my car, and, you know, we'd multiple days we would talk about, what do we call this podcast, right? We had all kinds of different names that we thought about, but we ended up on Hard Water Fishing Show. I don't remember why we picked that one, but there were some other candidates.
Well, and some of them I think we checked, and someone had already owned the website, or there was something else, you know, right. it didn't quite fit or we didn't like it. But some of it was, I think there was a couple, and I don't remember what they were, but somebody already owned the name. And so right. you didn't want to start from that deficit.
Yeah, so words matter. All right. The other thing I want to talk about, next thing I want to talk about in Reader News was we made the top five ice fishing podcasts this year again. So that's exciting.
Thank you to everybody.
Thank you. I will put a link out on Facebook, and if you want to check that out, it's from FeedSpot. So that's who ranks them. All right. And any other reader news you want to cover, Jay?
I don't think I have any right now.
Okay. All right. So all right. So moving on to gear, and we are still in gear season. Like, we talk about gear, but we're still in gear season, right, Jay? I mean,
yeah, we're in buying gear shopping for gear season.
Yeah. Ooh, I need that. I keep on ordering things from Amazon, and I keep on getting packages and trying not to make them noticed.
How's that going?
Not good when you talk about it on the podcast and your wife listens every time. So I can guarantee you in the next few days I will hear, Jeff, what did you say? So what did you buy? All right. So I understand that you had a kind of medium-sized addition to the arsenal.
Yeah, so I was, I think it's your fault. Oh. I think I'm blaming you. You posted a link to ice fishing deals. And I forgot about that link was this post for this Eskimo pistol bit auger at Mills Fleet Farm. And so I ended up buying one of those because it was $150, which is, you know, $50 to $70 off depending on where you found it. And I bought the 8-inch. I haven't picked it up yet. I did a ship-to-store deal, and so I have to go pick it up. But I did look kind of at some of the other options, and I struggled a little bit with, do I want the Eskimo or not? So I watched some YouTube videos on that and did some reading on it. And I kind of came down to, at that price on sale, it would do everything I needed to do, and it was a good price. And at the weight, it's 4 pounds. So that auger wow. itself is 4 pounds. And Cabela's has a different lightweight auger out, but they don't list the stinking weight of it. And
yeah,
so I didn't want to mess with it. And this opportunity presented it, and I had a yes from the Minister of Finance and War. So I didn't want to pass that up. And so I moved it forward. Now, what's going to be interesting, and I'll report back on this, is I don't own a fancy drill. What I have is an 18-volt DeWalt hammer drill that the XRP, I think, is XRP batteries. So it's not even a lithium battery. It's the old NiCads. And I've had that drill kind of in retirement because the batteries went bad. And when the batteries went bad, they didn't have, it's old enough, I think going on 10-plus years old, they didn't have the cheap replacement batteries on eBay yet. So I got on yep. eBay and I found a couple of replacement batteries for it for $35. They're 4.5 amp hour batteries. And so I'm going to throw that thing on that pistol bit and give her heck and see what happens. And
yeah, I know when you told me about it, I said, we're going to start a show like,
will it drill
or something?
You know,
if it starts smoking and then you're like, well, it won't.
You know, that drill's old,
or maybe it's just fine.
But I guess where I'm going with it is my intention is to use it for early ice this year, you know, so at most it might drill through 6 inches of ice, you know, sure. and if we get up to a foot, I'll take out my propane auger. So this is kind of right. an early ice lightweight thing. And then if I like the concept next year, then I can do the acquisition maybe on a Milwaukee Fuel or a really right. nice drill instead of. It's allowed me to spread that purchase out over a couple of years instead of buying like a $400 Strike Master or something like that.
Yep.
So that's why I'm Makes going sense. That route.
All right. Well, I'm excited to hear how it works. And now, is that the one with kind of the hex shaft instead of the round
yeah,
one?
Yeah. So it's a hex shaft, and there's no, like the Strike Master Light Flight, I think, has an adapter piece from the reviews, at least if the things I watched are right, which they may not be. Can give a little wobble, And this doesn't have that issue, but you can't adapt it. Well, I suppose you could, but it's not easily adaptable to a power auger. But I don't really need that adaption anyway.
Right.
So we'll see. The one downside that I've heard on them is because of the length of that shaft, sometimes it's hard to get it super tight because it's so close between the shield and the top of the drill. So we'll see. I think you can get around that with a vice grips too, personally. I think you could tighten it on there with a vice grips. So we'll see. I'll let you know.
And cool. And is that a shaver or a chipper blade? Shaver. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very cool. Excellent. Well, I'm excited to see how it works. I love new gear. I mean, I would love to have a lightweight one too. You can never have too much gear.
Well, I mean, that paired with a drill will be under 10 pounds.
Right. And really, it's not that you would bring it all with you when I say you can't have too much gear, but there's so many different situations and you need gear for each one of those, right? Like you said, 6 inches of ice is very different than 2 feet of ice, right? This would work great for that scenario. And then you got to have your propane auger for the thicker stuff. So I think it's great to have the right thing, the right tool for the right job. So, all right. So one thing I thought was interesting, I found this thing. It's called Ice Spike. They're at icespike.com. And I've seen Dave do this back in the day. He would just take sheet metal screws and screw them in the bottom of his boots for traction aid, you know, so you don't fall on your butt. And so this was kind of like the next level of that. So they're kind of like that, but they're actually made for this. So you screw them into your boots, and I'm assuming they don't go too far, so you screw into your feet or make your boots non-waterproof anymore, and you can walk around and not fall on your butt. And, you know, then when you get a new pair of boots, I guess you just swap them over.
Huh.
So their big selling point was it's better than sheet metal screws because they're durable.
Looks
and there's no straps.
Looks like you can take them out, supposedly. I'm looking at their website.
Yeah, they were kind of saying, you know, traditional kind of traction devices like this, that, you know, they're straps and they're kind of funky. So these are just like wearing shoes with the spikes. Just you probably have to be careful your walk with them after, you know, outside in the ice is good. You know, in the ice shack. Maybe not.
Yeah, I bet your local gas station wouldn't particularly appreciate you walking around on their floor with these things.
But, you know, I always like new gear like this.
It's kind of cool.
Idea, something.
Somebody's figured out a better way to sell screws.
Right. Yeah.
Good for them.
But they weren't too expensive, I don't think.
They'll make some money on it. That's cool.
Yeah. I kind of plugged this already, but I was sitting thinking about on the gear perspective. We don't think of media's gear, but like I really like my outdoor news. I know I said this already, but it's so nice to read. And I don't know, this time of year where I'm not fishing, it's nice to kind of get my fix by reading outdoor news about fishing.
Well, and I think too, to that point, you know, sometimes it's nice to ingest the paper media, not eat it, but like read it. Because, you know, we spend, depending on what you do, right? Depending on what you do for a living, you spend all day staring at the screen. And so when you want to have that relaxation time to watch yet another video on YouTube or whatever, it just feels, you know, you're kind of in that same mode. So it's nice to pick up a paper once in a while you read and then listen to the Hardwater Fishing Show in the background.
Exactly. Totally. No, I think you're right. And actually, I didn't even talk to you about this, but this is exactly why I like reading it, because I am currently, you know, staring at a screen now my whole day, because everything's remote. So if you're at a meeting, you're on your screen. If you're working, you're on your screen. So I exactly like it because I can, you know, sit down and not stare at a screen. And it really, it's easy.
Until we can go fishing and stare at a screen again.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Which is what which is a whole other episode, because I never used to do that back in the day, but that's
now.
So speaking of staring at a screen down a hole, the next thing I wanted to cover was my Project Helix 7 Garmin Lithium Shuttle. So I took it out of the box last week, and the lithium shuttle, that is. And I need to adapt the Hummingbird mount to the Garmin mount, which, of course, don't match.
No,
right?
Why would they?
So I've got to figure that out. and they want you to drill holes into the lithium shuttle, but you know the thing it says on the box is don't drill holes into it. So I'm at a dilemma. So I think what I'm gonna do is drill holes into the mount for the Hummingbird, because that part costs $20 and the lithium shuttle costs like $200. So if I screw it up, I can
that makes sense.
$20 part rather than a $200.
You know what you should do is you should get a, you know, and this would save you money in the long run. You should get a nice 3D printer and you could just print your own thing.
Yeah. Well, I know some other places you can just get some 3D parts.
Oh, yeah. True.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, I think that would be great. I need to figure that out. So, of course, then it comes in a bucket. It was really cool. Like, you get it in a bucket, like a 5-gallon bucket that you put the thing in.
Huh.
So it's going to stay protected. I thought it was pretty cool. And so it has a light, which seems really neat. I was charging it up, and I found out that I had to buy another cable because
it never ends.
So I had to buy this $30 cable to adapt, because I'm running a Hummingbird, not a Garmin. And it has a Garmin plug on one end and then like some wire on the end, the other end, so I can hook it to the power cable that I had to buy for my Hummingbird, because my other power cable is on the boat. So like it's when you're mounting things that aren't intended on going together, it ends up costing a bit more, it seems. But I still think it'll be awesome. So I'll probably take some pictures and get that out as soon as I get that all put together.
Very cool.
Hmm. The other gear thing I wanted to talk about, I kind of put a picture here, Jay. Do you see this stuff?
Yeah.
So my generator last year at the end of the year, and Jason, you were there. It was kind of, I don't know, I guess they call it surging. It was kind of funky a little bit in the year. And I think it needs to be, the carburetor needs to be cleaned up and needs some maintenance. So, and I have the Predator from, what's that store called? Harbor Freight. So I have the Predator 3500 from Harbor Freight that runs mine. So this awesome guy on YouTube had all these tips on how to maintain it and take apart the carburetor and clean it up. So I think I'm going to try it.
What could go wrong? So if you're in Minnesota, look soon for a generator for sale. Needs tune-up. Ran when last used.
Yeah, exactly. So I got to put a new spark plug in it, because they said put an iridium spark plug because they follow plugs, but I guess iridium burns so hot that it kind of cleans itself up a little bit. I got a new dipstick that's a magnetic thing that's supposed to pick up the particles in the oil so that they don't run through your generator. And then I got this other cool thing, and this isn't ice fishing gear, but it's related to the generator and maintenance, so I think it's close. Okay. It looks like a big syringe, but it's used for like putting oil in and out of things. So you know how it makes a huge mess?
Mm-hmm.
This is just like a giant syringe. So you stick it in there and you suck up the oil and then you push it into the engine.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've never seen one before. Is it maybe like everybody else is like, I've seen one of these 100 times.
Well, I've got like a little oil pump I use for filling differentials.
Like boat motors.
Boat motors. Yeah. You know, so for like filling a differential on the bottom of a pickup or a transfer case or something, you can't, you know, tip up a bottle or a boat motor and that kind of stuff.
So we'll try it out and see how it works. Now, if you had to fill up a V8 diesel truck with that thing, you might be there for a while. So I think it's fine for a generator.
Yeah. But you don't have such... No, I think that's really cool. It's kind of a neat little deal.
All right. So Jason, next thing we wanted to cover, you posted this article about reducing line twist.
I did. So we put that out on the Facebook page. I read this article. I came across on another Facebook group that I'm on. And I read it and I really liked it. I'd encourage you guys to go out and read it. It talks... It's from a guide. Nick...
Yep, from Lip Ripper Guide Service.
Yeah, Nick Harrington is the fellow that wrote the article. And it's just a really good, kind of a concise way to look at line twist. He gave a neat suggestion to belt, you know, to put that lure down just underneath the water and see what it does. If it starts spinning on you, you've got line twist. And that's going to do that even worse by the time it gets to the bottom of the hole. Talked about using braid because it has... really no twist. Isn't that what, if I'm recalling what it said?
Yeah, it said Braid had no twist, which I agree. I mean, and I don't, I like Braid. And then they put the other key was the barrel swivel, right? And then to put a floral leader on it so that the fish can't see the Braid because the Braid might be distracting.
Well, he talked a lot about how the Braid distracts, and I would agree with that. I had Braid on a fishing reel that I used at Lake of the Woods at one time, one of the trips we were on years ago. And, you know, obviously there's other reasons I got out fish, but clearly that year, I mean, it was pretty noticeable that the person next to me was catching fish and I was not. And
it
was Sean, actually, which tells you how easy they were to catch. And I was not catching them. And I did switch and had better luck. So I do think there's obviously something to that. So because of the the Braid's easier to see. So anyway.
So the rig they were talking about was basically used like a thin Braid. Mm-hmm. And we used this when we went fishing at Lake Superior. You can get pretty thin Braid. And then they would do a barrel swivel and then the floral leader. So the only two kind of distractors I have about that is from Braid generally. If you fish outside in the winter, Braid is tough because it absorbs the water. Right? I mean, it's great for a fish house. I mean, my rattle reels and stuff, I'll have that on there. But I think it can be hard in outdoor times. Can be hard. And then
he was talking though about 3 to 4 pound Braid. I honestly have to say I've never run a 3 to 4 pound Braid.
Yeah, I haven't either. You know, I mean, that stuff we run on Superior was like,
yeah. So pound. I mean, it might act differently. So maybe. So you should buy some and try that.
No, I still think Braid's going to soak up water because it's inherently it's Braid.
That's
right?
True.
It's fibers that are I think they just soak it up. And then the only other challenge I've had with Braid is it's hard to cut.
Yeah.
Right? Like when you're switching lures and stuff, it's just kind of a pain in the butt to deal with. I mean, you're not going to lose a fish, but so I don't think it's wrong. I think it was good advice. I just don't know if it's for me. I think I might stick with my mono. I think we had one last gear thing. So I stuck a picture out here, Jade, and I sent this to you. Did you see that picture of that ice sled?
Yeah. So where did you see this picture?
So I was, cruising Facebook for ice fishing stuff, which is like a pastime, right? And I saw this, and it's like a homemade sled. So it's made out of plywood, basically just a box. And then underneath it has two skis, but it's all made out of plywood and some ropes. So it's like, and the reason I thought it was interesting is when I was a kid, like I had something very similar to this. Like my neighbor who lived across the street, and I know he listens to the podcast, so we'll see if he says anything, but my neighbor Sean and his dad Jim, he was one of the first people that kind of started ice fishing with, and we built something very, very similar to this. Now, if you look in this picture, this one's pretty fancy where it has like a little bin in the front and the wood is curved up. And I'll post a picture of this on Facebook. But
go on. There's the rest of the story on this, but go on. I know more about this.
I couldn't do this. What? Oh my gosh. So it was like for sale for $10. Now I got to figure out what he's talking about. But anyway, so I built one of these as a kid and I thought it was really cool. So I thought it was cool to see one out here. And I don't know, it has a name on it too. So
do you want to hear the rest of the story?
I do want to hear the rest of the story.
This same exact box was bought by a fellow that listens to our show and we've met. So Zach, he's on Instagram under Tired Axe Outdoors is his moniker on Instagram. Yep. He bought this and he's got pictures of it up on his Instagram page. Yeah. Yep. So Zach bought it.
Oh my gosh. I saw it was sold and I was almost bummed.
So maybe if you're nice, he'll let you visit it.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe that. That'd be awesome. I mean, I'm telling you, it was the same thing. So we built, they don't have this opened, but the top flipped up and there was no canvas or anything. And then there was a bench and you could sit there, right?
Yeah. It's
like, I would swear this is the one I built almost.
Well, it's got the address on it. 10713.
Yeah, that's not my address.
is the address that's written on there. So really cool thing. Yeah, it's such a small world, right, within ice fishing.
Oh my gosh.
As soon as I saw this picture up on our, when you were getting on the show notes, and I'm like, wait a minute, I've seen that. And then I went to Zach's Tired Axe Outdoors Instagram page, and there it is. I knew I had seen it, and he was talking about it on there. It's super cool.
So I built one of these, or with my neighbor helped build one of these, and I don't know what happened to it, but I remember compared to modern gear, I mean, this thing isn't light, right? We built it out of thin plywood, but it's still a big plywood box that you're dragging across the ice, right? Then you put your stuff in it, and we walked, and I had my hand auger, right? I mean, it reminded me of that time when I was probably 10, 9. I don't know how old I was. So fishing out in Tanner's Lake.
Yeah.
So pretty cool.
That's super cool.
Wow. That is like a story within a story.
And it's like, it's fun. Small world.
Well, I want to see this thing in person though. We're going to have to meet up with Zach. I mean, after maybe in a month or so when things settle down here. All right. So I think that's gear. We kind of went on about gear for quite some time here, but I think we're ready to move on to Oli.
So up next, we have our good friend Oli, and he's going to tell us all about knots, because as he knows, and most of you now know, Jeff and I are not very good at them. So let's take a listen.
All right, today on the Hardwater Show, we have Oli. Oli is the special correspondent and local expert. He's also a Hardwater Invitational veteran, and tonight he will be teaching us all about knots. So welcome to the show, Oli.
Hey, it's good to be here. You got it. Got to cut out expert though.
Oh no, that stays in. We have told all of our listeners at the beginning of the show how much you know about knots and fishing knots.
So you set me up for failure. All right,
that's what I like about you. You're such a humble guy.
Yeah.
and I like that we know one knot basically, which we talked about already, Jay.
And Oli
knows,
knot.
Yeah, the trailing knot. It only knows at least four times as many as we do. So he's definitely way more of an expert than we are.
I don't use them all. I just use like five.
Yeah.
Or five. Six. Okay. Well, let's talk about those five. Do we want to do some other questions for Oli first, Jeff, just to set the stage a little bit?
Yeah. So usually when we have guests on, and Oli's a frequent guest, he's been on the show two or three times, I think. And so usually we kind of start out with some kind of more, questions to find out a little more about our guests. So
yeah, like tell me about your childhood experiences. No, I'm kidding.
Fishing. Fishing experience. So we'll start to cut that off.
My psych appointment was yesterday. I didn't know I'd have to do double duty this week.
Take you down the road.
All right. So Oli, when did you start ice fishing? Like at what age?
I think I was 19. And I did it on a Christmas break home from college with a bunch of the boys from Woodbury. And I had absolutely no gear. And it was a sled full of tip-ups. And I had never even seen a tip-up before. So I was a 100% rookie. And couldn't tell you at that time the difference between a crappie and a walleye. I knew absolutely nothing when we went to college about fishing. And we got out there and they had brought firewood in another sled, which was kind of perplexing as well, because I'm like, why are we bringing firewood? And they're like, well, it's cold out. I'm like, well, yeah, we're walking on ice. Well, they said, we're going to start a fire to stay warm. And that freaked me out a bit. We're going to light a fire on perfectly safe ice with what's wrong with that picture, right? So we did. And we actually caught a number of walleyes in the cities. I don't know if you could repeat that kind of success today. You know, the pressure on the fisheries is different today than it was then.
I mean, we spent whole weekends on Mille Lacs and didn't catch a fish. So that's pretty good that you went out and caught some your first time.
Yeah, I think we actually had, from memory, three or four flags go at one time.
Wow.
I can't tell you we iced all of them, but I just remember we had a lot of flags, and every time we did ice a fish, it was a walleye.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So that's an awesome story. I mean, I always find that everybody that talks about their first ice fishing experience, they usually know what it was, right? And they usually have a story.
Yeah.
It leaves an impression. All right. So what's your favorite fish to target? Like what's, if you're going out ice fishing, you're like, if I can fish for anything, I want to fish for.
It's walleyes. It's always walleyes. Lakers. That hasn't worked out so well so far. Although the last lark that I put Kilby on panned out, but that wasn't through the ice.
Correct. And that was a lark.
More and more I am willing to fish for whatever is likely to bite, you know, what's going to be successful. Because walleyes are tough when it's like noon and sunny. So then I'll go for like jumbo perch or crappies if those are known to be pretty good in that whatever lake I'm on. You know, there's a lot of lakes that don't produce very good crappies or even have jumbos. But walleye is first and foremost.
Great. Yeah. So when you're targeting walleyes, which I think we do quite a bit, what's is your number one thing or advice for catching a walleye? Like what would you tell people if they're going out to find some walleyes?
Low light, dusk and dawn. I think that's number one. Give yourself the best chance you can. You know, Jay and I took advantage of early morning last year for the first time in hard water history, and it panned out for us. Mm-hmm. And then we always catch most of our walleye right at dusk. The timing of the day is probably the biggest factor of whether or not you're going to have success.
Especially depending on that lake, right? You know, if it's a really clear fishery, clear lake, I mean, during the day it can be tough.
Well, and it goes both ways. When it's stained water, as soon as it gets dark, it's done.
Don't tell me that. That's a lot of lakes. That's not the way you should talk about it.
Am I going to have to referee here? I know that Jason has a very different opinion than Ole on this whole nighttime fishing on Lake of the Woods thing.
So. You just keep fishing.
No, I
stop at like 5:30.
No, Lord. I know. And I'm you know, I'm more willing to stay out there than most. But I guess, yeah, it's just there.
I know, and you do. And
there's the prime times. Yep. Right.
And then it ends. Yeah. He goes, well, Jason. Yeah. Yeah. Ole, we've been out here now for about an hour and we haven't had a bite, and you know, it's 7 o'clock and we get back by the time we get supper done. It's gonna be pretty late.
We're burning propane.
Burning propane. Yeah.
Yeah. That's burning all
propane.
We're
just, we're just burning propane. We're just burning propane, Jason. We're just burning propane.
We need a shirt. We need a t-shirt that says that. Okay. We should make a t-shirt. Right. Just burning propane.
We're just burning propane.
Burning propane is better than sitting at work, right?
Oh yeah. Yep.
A day burning propane is better than a day in the office.
That's for sure. For sure.
There's a new slogan for you.
Yeah, we'll get some t-shirts for those too. So Ole, we had you join as a special guest this week to talk about knots, because Jason and I are definitely not experts in the knot area, and we were looking for an expert, and we're getting you more comfortable with that, with that title. Nope,
it's not working. I'll tell you what I know, but the expert is a long ways from it.
So Ole, can you tell us, you know, Jason and I use the trilene knot pretty much for everything, and maybe tell us why that's maybe not the best choice and what some other choices would be and when you'd use those knots.
Just like you guys, I learned to tie the trilene and used it for pretty much everything. And it's really good for mono and floral. It's a great knot, and it's easy. And then I learned how to tie a Rapala, just because it came with instructions on one of my first Rapalas I ever bought. And I, you know me, I looked at it, actually read it, and
Yeah, we just chucked the box and tied the trilene on and chucked it out there, right?
Well, and that's what I do now. But the REPL is pretty much the same, except you tie an overhand loop, and then you pretty much commence on tying a trilene like you would. But that loop gives you a small loop at the end, and it gives the REPL the ability to give you the action that it was intended to give. Whereas if you tie a trilene and cinch it to that split ring, it kind of impairs that movement. And so I thought, well, that's probably worthwhile, right? You're going to get your money's worth if you let the REPL do what it was supposed to do. So I started tying that one.
That's interesting, because I always think of knots as like, the knot's better because it's tighter, holds your lure on, but I didn't really think about it as like it affects the action of your jig, but it really does.
Yeah. And so that doesn't really, it's more of a crankbait type thing, right? Which doesn't really apply to ice fishing. So yeah, I tie the REPL, but never through the ice.
Oh, I was just sitting here wondering if
really
some of those flutter spoons would benefit from that or not.
Yeah, and I think they could, and I've tried it. The one thing I've noticed is, you know, how you, the more you have going on at the terminal tackle, the higher risk there is when you're jigging aggressive that treble flutters up and then hooks on something, and then you reel it up and things are boogered up.
And you're like, how long's that been going on?
Yeah, and the REPL is a potential contributor to that problem. So I try and steer clear of that through the ice.
Okay. That makes sense.
Because I think it's more of the wobble action when you're cranking that you get out of a REPL. It's not as much of a consideration on a vertical presentation.
So that knot you would not want to use for ice fishing?
I wouldn't say you don't, but I don't use it.
Okay.
Each their own, I guess.
Okay. When we put these knots, we're going to try to post some links to these different knots out there.
Yeah.
And we'll put, do not use this one.
Yep. Sure. I guess my go-to is the uni. I was invited to a non-official muskie tournament years ago, and they told me and showed me how to tie a uni, because muskie lures are really expensive. Right. I mean, they easily go $15 to $25 a piece, and you're using heavy braid for musky, and the trilene slips right out often in with braid. So the uni is superior in that it maintains almost all of the tensil strength of your line, and it doesn't introduce a weak point, which most knots do. So I think, I don't know what the numbers are or something, but like a trilene knot, let's say you have 10-pound mono and you tie a trilene knot onto your jig and spoon through the ice. Realistically, you probably have the equivalent of about 8-pound test, because that trilene knot knocked down the strength of that line by about 25%. Because it introduced a weak spot, a kink. The uni is like 90-some%. So it's known to be really good for that. It doesn't introduce a significant weak point in your line at the knot. So that's one of the benefits. The other big benefit is it holds on braid. Again, I don't use braid a ton through the ice, because a lot of it will ice up, but now there's new ice braids that work just fine. And I do kind of like that, because braid doesn't get the memory like mono does.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know what it's like. If you know a knot like the trilene, you can almost tie it with your eyes closed. Maybe you can even tie it with your eyes closed. The uni has become so familiar to me. It's just my go-to knot, and I know it's a really good knot. And it works for mono just as well as braid. So it's not just that it holds well in braid, but it's really good for mono and fluoro alike. So that's my go-to for 90% of my ties. It's a uni.
Well, with getting older, putting that line through those little eyelets is basic. My eyes might as well be shut. I don't know about you.
Right. Well, and that's kind of the downfall of the trilene is you gotta run your line through the eye of the hook twice.
Mm-hmm.
If you're tying it right. So the uni, it's just once. So I guess that'd be a benefit too.
Yeah.
And then the uni is also, you can use a uni to snell a hook. Or you can tie an actual snell. That's another one of the knots that I use. But I've kind of gone to the uni for snelling hooks. I do that a lot more when I'm pre-tying Lindy rigs for walleye. But if you want to snell a hook, which is like the ultimate union between your line and a hook, if you're just using a plain hook, you can use the uni knot to do that. And you know what I mean by a snell, right? Where it's wrapped around the shank of the hook.
Yeah. Yeah. We've seen those.
Yeah.
I've seen them when you buy them from the store. I've never actually tied one myself, but I've seen them.
Yeah. So yeah, it's super clean. And really strong. So I use the uni for that. And then I've also used, you can do it, use a uni like you would a blood knot to join different lines together. So if you had braid and you wanted to use a floral leader, you can tie a uni on each line to the other line, like a blood knot would to join those lines. Usually I'm going to use a barrel swivel or ball bearing swivel in between, so I'm not doing that. But I think in the Boundary Waters once I was short line, so I had to join lines together, and so I did that with a uni.
Well, that was the one line that I know Jason and I used when we fished Superior, because we had a, you know, we were fishing in like 200 feet of water. So we had a braid. It was like a really heavy duty braid, like 20 pound test. And that was tied to a floral leader, like you said, and we tied those together. And there must've been a reason we didn't use a swivel, but we didn't. And I think we used the blood knot when we did that, right, Jay?
You know, I was trying to think of what kind of knot that was, but that sounds about right. Yeah.
Or we decided the blood knot was too hard. We did a different knot. I don't know.
Yeah, the blood knot is kind of tricky because you're twisting one line around the other, and then you got to kind of pinch that and hold all of those wraps and try and do the same on the other.
Yeah, that's
not the knot let the did. Other one unravel. Yeah, that's your blood.
The uni, yeah, that's the knot we did.
The uni, you can literally tie a uni around the other line and cinch it, and then tie the opposite line on the other side together and cinch it, and then just pull them both in the uni's butt up to each other and you're done. Yeah, so it works pretty slick. It's actually easier.
So would you say that's the uni is the knot you use the most ice fishing then?
Far and away, that's probably what I use 95% of the time I'm tying anything. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
We're going to have to go to uni camp. We're going to have to figure out how to tie this knot, Jay.
Yeah, and I think I've tried to show you guys.
Yeah, you have. You have.
Right? Yeah. It's one of those things, though, right? I mean, new knots are tough because not just understanding what it's supposed to look like, but it's figuring out the dexterity side of it. How do you hold this and do this right and efficiently? Mm-hmm. I mean, I jacked it up a number of times and lost lures because I did it all wrong and then just kept at it till I got it right. I would say my second go-to is the Palomar. Jason, you and I have talked a lot about drop shotting, or when you go back to the basics, where you're just using a plain hook and you want, instead of a bobber, you want to have constant connection with the floor. Yep. So you just put a split shot. The Boundary water split shot's king, right? Because if you snag, you pull your line right through the split shot, you pinch a new one on, you're back in business. You're not retying. But the Palomar is used a lot for bass fishermen that do drop shotting as well. And in the ice world, I've used it too because I don't want to use a bobber. So like if you're hole hopping, your bobber starts to get froze up, or if you have a bobber stop, it just ices up and catches on the ice that forms on your tip of your rod. So using a Palomar is really nice when you want to lead or leave a amount of line below the hook. So you're tying it in line like you would a dropper loop, which is another knot that's like a prusik, which we use in the boundary waters for our hammock setups all the time. The Palomar is really good when you're drop shotting. And that's actually also considered one of the very best knots for braid as well. And that's basically making an overhand loop knot with a bite.
So explain a bite.
So if you have a line in your hand and you bring it together to make a loop and pinch that loop, that's a bite.
Oh, okay.
So you literally just you pass the line through the eye of the hook and then come back again. Okay. So you basically created a bite. And yep. Then you do an overhand loop with that bite. But before you cinch it, the loop end goes over the hook before you cinch it.
Hmm.
And then if you're drop shotting, the tag end, so that's what you would normally cut off with other lines. And well, if you're drop shotting, you intentionally left 1 to 2 feet of tag end left. You run that back down through the eye of the hook before you cinch. Because that allows the hook to sit upright and naturally alongside the line versus sticking out sideways.
See, this is where you're proving to me that you are not expert.
Yeah, I've learned new words tonight.
I know, yeah. Exactly.
But that's it. It's the Uni and Palomar, pretty much my two main ones. And then, you know, I guess if I'm feeling lazy, I tie the Trilene because it's just so doggone fast. But I'll never use the Trilene in braid. I've seen it fail too many times.
Well, and I think kind of what spurred maybe this topic for me is, you know, I've usually used like a 4-pound test typically or 6-pound test for ice fishing.
Yep.
And this year I picked up some 2-pound that I'm going to put on an inline reel that I have for some of the panfish around here. Well, that Trilene knot hasn't worked real well in that super light line because, you know, if you lose some of that strength on a 2-pound test, you're already...
Yeah.
There's not much left.
For sure.
Whereas like when I was a kid, we used, like when we fished open water, you know, dad always spooled us up with 20-pound test. You know, as long as that knot didn't slip, it held for the most part.
Right.
What is that when we were kids? I did the same thing, Jay. I remember going to the store when you were a kid and you would go to like a Kmart or whatever. I think that's where I got my line.
Pomida. You know,
yeah, I didn't. We have Kmart, but but you know, I remember sitting in that aisle going 20-pound test, but they have 30-pound tests. It's stronger. Why wouldn't I get that? Right? I remember doing this. Like, you just want. What if I catch a 30-pound fish? I mean, because you know you're a kid. And I don't know. I think back. You talk about that thick line, and it was thick. I mean, it was heavy duty.
Yeah, but you didn't lose lures because you could. I mean, we used to pull up trees bigger than the boat with that stuff.
Right. Right.
You know, and you'd grab your lure back and off you'd straighten the hook and off you'd go again.
And that's one thing I'll admit. When you're using less than 8-pound test, I just about lose my religion trying to tie a Palomar knot. It's an overhand knot. It sounds stupid simple, and it is. But it is so difficult to do with really thin line that just doesn't want to do what you want it to do, and it twists on you so easily. It's tough.
That doesn't bode a lot of confidence.
Right.
Like for me to try to learn a new knot this year. So maybe back to 20-pound test.
Go to the Uni. The uni is okay. Just as easy with any pound.
Okay.
I think.
Good.
If there's the knot strength, I think is something people overlook. It's not just maybe ideal for one thing or the other, but knowing that this knot didn't introduce a weaker point in already light line, that's a consideration.
Yeah, that's kind of what raised it for me was, you know, because I know I've tied Trilene knots and then you test them and they snap and you're like, oh, okay, that didn't work. I missed something there.
Right.
You know, and so you go back and do it again and it's good. But Yeah, they always have that inkling in the back of your head. Why did that first one snap so easy? What did I do different?
Right.
Or you've done it where you tie a knot up, and I always try to, you know, you kind of pull on it a little bit to make sure you did an okay job. Because, and, you know, when it just pulls out, you're like, oh boy, I'm in trouble now. Because yeah. It's happened, right? I've pulled it.
Oh, yeah. If you haven't had a knot come out, you haven't fished much, right? I mean, yeah. let's be honest.
And there's nothing worse than, like, you lose a big fish, you know, and if you pull it up and you got a clean break, like, oh, I bit my line, I cut my line. But, man, when you pull it up and you've got a curly Q on the end of that line, you're yeah. like, God, oh, no. Oh,
I know. It's like the walk of shame. Bad. You kind of, like, look around to see if anybody else noticed. It's totally your fault, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing. That was absolutely user error on that point. Nothing you can argue at all.
Well, and, you know, you invested all that time. You know, you've gone out there. The one fish that you were going to catch that day, maybe, and you tied it wrong. So mm-hmm. test that knot.
You know, I think I told you guys we were at grouse camp and my nephew's boots kept coming untied. And I'm like, what? You don't know the turquoise turtle? And he goes, what the heck is a turquoise turtle? And I said, well, it's almost the same knot you already tie on your shoes. And that's what that's called the shoemaker's knot. The turquoise turtle is a slight modification of it, and it never comes undone. So in my curiosities, this just happened like 4 or 5 days ago. I have to do some paperwork in the bathroom. And that morning I tried the turquoise turtle, and we're all working from home, right? So I got like my comfy pants on, and so they're all drawstrings, right? And I don't know if you guys have noticed, but if you just tie a normal shoelace knot, it slips.
Yep.
Right? So you got to double knot it. But the double knot can make for some very interesting pucker factor situations when you're trying to get that undone, right? And you're like, come on, this has got to come out now. It's go time. So I tried this turquoise turtle. I didn't do it right. I was looking for scissors. I was like, I got to cut this stuff off because there is no time left. It all worked out. You'll be happy. No.
So, didn't have to throw out the sweatpants, huh?
Yeah, try it on your shoes. Don't try it on your comfy pants at home, because that can get ugly.
That's awesome.
Well, we'll put directions to these knots up on our Facebook. We'll find something online, I suppose, there's on. And the turquoise turtle as well.
For sure. So Ole, when you are looking for knot information, do you have a favorite place to go, or do you just kind of Google it and find a good website?
Just Google it. Yeah, just Google it. I've got a knot tying app on my phone. I'll admit I have a problem. actually, that's more if I find something that I think is slick and I want to try it. The app ensures that if I need a refresher when I'm on the ice, I've got it at hand. But YouTube, YouTube's the best because you get an illustration.
Mm-hmm. It's a good idea though, the app though, because you usually have your phone with you on the ice. So if you're, you know, it's a slow day out in the ice, maybe try some uni knots or
you should be drilling more holes and moving is what you should be doing. There are no slow days. There's only lazy days. Right. If you're feeling lazy, otherwise you should be out of drilling.
Well, if I'm watching a movie,
Seinfeld.
Seinfeld,
exactly. Looking for fish. Jeez. Yeah, lazy day. A lazy day. Yes, we all have lazy days, but not. There are no slow days.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Awesome. Well, that's some really good information on knots, and I can guarantee you had a lot more to share there than Jay and I did.
Yeah.
That was awesome. So thank you very much.
And I really appreciate the real world. I really appreciate the real world.
Red leather, yellow leather.
I got to do this all over again so we can cut this in. I really appreciate the real. Hey, thanks for sharing those examples with us. Always.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing
some
those
real world experience.
Yeah, I can't talk. Holy cow.
All right. And I think the last thing we always, Jason and I tell a legend at the end of every show. And, you know, we've told legends for 3 years mostly, and we're kind of running out. So, you know, we usually have a guest tell a legend or share a legend with us. And I know when we talked about this, since you're a lot of our legends include you, it's a little more challenging for you because you got to come up with something where Jay and I probably weren't around.
Yeah, where we weren't there.
Yeah. So, right. If you want to share a fishing legend, ice fishing legend with us, that'd be awesome.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it was tough because just about everything that comes to mind initially, I'm like, well, you were there, you know, the story. So one story that comes to mind is when my wife and I, Kathy, we went up to Canada on an ice fishing trip. It was probably seven or eight years ago. And, we went to Pasha Lake Resorts, and they're awesome. They give you all the recon you could possibly imagine. They send you maps. They tell you exactly where to fish, how to fish, every different lake you should consider for all the different species they offer. And so day one, we're going to hit Omen Lake, I believe is the name. And, you know, I'm looking at a map, and Jason knows this. I mean, I look at a map, oh, it's inches away. it can't be that far. So I want, this is supposed to be the premier walleye fishery in the area. And so.
And Oli, where, can you set the stage for what area you're in, like just generally?
So Jellicoe, Ontario is where we were staying.
Gotcha.
Okay. Which is straight east of Lake Nipigon.
Okay.
The Lake Omen is northeast of where we're staying. And when we showed up, we're the only ones at the resort. They had plowed the road. They have a number of cabins. We have just the one, obviously. And it started snowing on our way there. And it was actually kind of a white knuckle deal just getting to the resort because of all the snow. And it just never stopped. But it's not coming down fast and furious, but it's gradually accumulating. So the first morning, my thought is I got to get Kathy on walleyes. That's going to set the stage for the trip because she's even more into walleye than I am. I mean, that's really all she wants to fish for. And if I can start out the trip by getting her on walleye, perfect. The trip is already a success. So we start on our way to Lake Omen. I think it's 2.5 hours or 3 hours later, we park. And it's been forest road all the way. We have literally not seen signs of another human. And we're only driving away from civilization down these forest roads. What we didn't find out until later was they shut the forestry industry down like a week or two before we got there. So there was no intention of them coming to plow these forest roads either. And the snow is accumulating. We get the snowmobiles off of the trailer and we start going down what is now a 3-mile path to get to the lake from this road. We only get 100 or 200 yards and the snowmobiles just want to tip because it's literally 3 to 4 feet of powder. And one of the snowmobiles starts running really rough. Well, it's just the two of us. So I'm like, we got to get this on the trailer while we still can without having to push it on because it's running that bad. Oh, and before I came to that decision, I managed to drag my Jiffy ice auger off the back of that snowmobile at 60 miles an hour down the road.
It still worked though, right?
It still worked. It barely did anything. It just wore a little bit of the cushion on the handles off. So there's props for Jiffy.
Do that with a Strikemaster electric.
Yeah.
That plastic handle? What are you talking about?
Yeah. So we did that and then we kind of reassessed. And by this time, I think it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We are still 3 miles from the lake, and we realize how long it took us to get there, and the snow is still getting deeper. We're a long ways from anybody, and we're down to one machine. Do we even think about going 3 miles further, and then that fails? Then what? So even though we have not drilled a hole yet, we just decide, all right, we got to cut our losses. It's a good thing Jason wasn't with, because we would have tried to do it anyway.
We would have been there till spring.
Yes.
Just would have lived there now. That's where we're at. This is where we live.
So we loaded back up and started the drive back. And as we're going down the road, we see something really dark in the road, laying on the road. And we stop and get out. And it's a moose antler. And it's snowing heavier now. And I realize there's snow sitting in the shovel or the scoop of this moose antler. And I'm thinking, this had to have been shed minutes ago. Otherwise, it would be buried in snow already. Mm-hmm. And there was blood drops frozen from the shed.
Wow.
So we're looking all over, and there's fresh moose tracks everywhere. We don't see anything, but we throw the moose antler back in the back of the truck. We did get all the paperwork to take it home with us, which is a debacle on in and of itself. We drive 400 yards, and Kathy says, I see the moose. And sure enough, we see two bull moose to our right, and one of them is missing its left antler because that's sitting in the back of the truck.
Wow. So did you go actually try to get the other antler?
Yeah. We started throwing rocks at it to see if we could get the other one to fall off. No, they were a long ways away. I did get a picture, but it's with a phone camera, and yeah, it's 400 yards away.
I mean, from 8 years ago? Yeah.
Yeah, right. So that kind of saved the day, because that was a pretty cool experience. And we managed to get to Blacktop by dark. And then we were just a few minutes from the cabin. The next day didn't really go a whole lot better either. We got stuck in some really bad slush on another lake, and we were going after Lakers. That was my day. And again, we never drilled a hole. It took us 3.5 hours to get off of that lake. And then we were just absolutely exhausted. So literally the first 2 days of this trip, and we have not drilled a hole.
Wow.
But those are my kind of trips. Not that I didn't get to fish, but the adventure level was really high.
Mm-hmm.
My wife looked at it in hindsight and realized we had just upped our life insurance policy and was convinced I was trying to kill her.
No, then you would have gone down that 3 mile path.
Yeah. Right.
You wait here. I'll be right back.
So then we get home and we were watching Ice Road Truckers, which was one of their earlier seasons. Maybe they were in season 2, and we actually saw one of the roads on that show that we were on.
Oh my gosh.
So we realized then we were a long ways north.
Yeah. Wow. So, well, that's a great story. Did you actually catch a fish that whole trip?
We did. We ended up fishing on a lake right outside of Geraldton, which was really disappointing because we went that far, and then we ended up fishing on a lake that was right outside of a town. it's like we could have done this at home.
But you're still in Canada. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was really interesting about Canada is when you go to buy bait in that area, they're like, well, how many suckers do you want? And I'm like, well, don't you have fatheads or crappie minnows or something, rainbow chub, whatever? And they're like, well, no, everybody uses suckers around here. That's what the walleye eat. And so sure enough, I mean, that's what we caught all of our walleye on, was suckers.
Like the kind of 6-inch ones or something like that, or 5?
I don't think they ones? Yeah, I think they were a little bit smaller. Like I don't know what you'd call them around here, light pike.
Yeah, probably light pike. That makes sense.
Yeah. So they were smaller suckers, but they were suckers. I've never bought suckers for a walleye. That's always been my tip up rig for pike or something.
So what'd you hook them on?
It was a regular hook. Which was
I mean, did you put them on like a
like a spoon or
what the heck am I trying to say?
We used like pretty much, yeah, we used pretty much the regular stuff, but you just hook them real shallow, you know, because I'm always mm-hmm. hooking along the dorsal, mm-hmm. and just trying to pierce the skin and come from the back of the fish to the front of the fish so that when it swallows it head first, the hook is going to grab, right? You do that and your confidence level at first kind of goes way down, right? Because it's a lot of bait for a small hook. How easy is it for them to just grab the tip of that sucker and yank it right off? But they're aggressive. They're less pressured fish, so it really wasn't an issue. We didn't have a lot of misses.
Well, thanks so much, Ole, for coming on the show. We certainly appreciate it. It was great to hear from you, and we look forward to out fishing you in March when we go on our annual ice fishing trip again. And maybe we'll try to deploy some of those new knots you taught us. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Tight lines.
Cheers.
Five. You've been listening to the Hard Water Fishing Show with Jeff and Jason.
Say goodbye.
One of the most unique podcasts on the planet, where we talk about tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends. We'll be back soon.
Bye-bye.
Till then, signing off.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.